listening to the Daily Roundup here as part of the Reality Steve podcast. I am your host, Reality Steve. Thank you all for tuning in on this Wednesday episode. Good one for you. We got an update on Jen's filming for the Bachelorette season that's going on right now. Going to talk some Vanderpump Rules from last night. We're winding down to the end of season 11 here. Last week, we found out that Tori Spelling, in addition to her 9021 OMG podcast with Jenny Garth, is adding a podcast called Misspelling, a solo podcast. Well, Jenny couldn't just have Tori do her own podcast. Jenny now has a solo podcast as well called I Choose Me. You're damn right I've got thoughts about this. We're going to talk about SNL again with Ryan Gosling from this past Saturday. Something that literally will not get off my feed. It's the talk of the internet, and I absolutely love it. And then I'm going to talk about something I haven't talked about in probably a year, yet I've been very active in this. We'll get to all that momentarily. Okay, starting off, in Bachelorette land, Jen is obviously still filming her season, and it was announced yesterday by the Bachelor Nation Instagram page that you can attend a date this Sunday in Seattle. Yes, that was the city I was told about a month ago that they were going to be in at the end of April, exactly April 21st to the 24th. So Sunday's date is actually the first date in Seattle. It is going to be a one-on-one date, but you can attend it. Whatever they're doing during the day, you can attend. You just need to email, what is it, bachelorette Seattle@gmail.com. Give me your first and last name, your email address, first and last name of your guest, email address of your guest, and you have to be available. Well, first you got to email them, and they'll send you the details of what it is. They usually don't tell you until the day before about where you have to meet and where you have to go. Sometimes these dates where they invite the fans, they do allow phones. Sometimes they don't. But considering it is a U.S. city date, it's going to get out who she's with. It's not going to be a surprise. There's no way that it doesn't get out. And then there is going to be dates, obviously, on Monday and Tuesday, rose ceremony Wednesday, and they're out of there on Thursday. Now, the thing that I know a lot of you are asking is this the last episode before Hometowns? And my answer is I don't know, because I don't know how many are left. I have an idea of how many are left, but I told you about a month before the season started, the one thing that I had heard was they are starting off in Australia and New Zealand. I assume they're in New Zealand right now because they did episodes at least 2 and 3 in Australia, which we know about because there was a comedy group date in Australia and then there was the stripping group date in Australia. I'm assuming they went to New Zealand after that. I don't know for sure, but it's probably, considering what I had heard ended up playing out, that they were going right to Australia after the first night at the alternate mansion. So it all depends. I don't know about eliminations just yet. I know about certain names that are home, certain names that are still there, but it's too confusing when I don't have the whole list. So I do not know how many are left. Seattle could be the last spot before Hometowns. If we are able to find out how many men are left in Seattle, if it's 7 or less, then it's the last up. It's the last stop before Hometowns. If it's 8 or more, it's not the last stop before Hometowns. So keep that in mind. But I do know that Sunday is a one-on-one date. So if you do attend, you will be able to watch her one-on-one date. Also, on the same email, or the link that they gave out, if you scroll down, it says, we need your burning questions about love and relationships. Send us your questions or situations you need advice on to do with love and relationships or things you want to know about our bachelorette and her suitors. When? Monday, April 22nd. Where? Remote. You will be calling in. Send your questions in. Please email bachelorettadvice@gmail.com. So Monday clearly is going to be a group date. And my guess is, you know, they haven't been to Seattle in a long time, but I remember on Jason's season when they went to Seattle, a group date was all the women, not all the women, but however many women were on the group date went up to a radio station in Seattle, ironically, that Molly ended up working for later in her career. And they took questions from callers and talked to the host in real time. Obviously, this is well before stuff was being, you know, figured out during filming the way it is now. But when we saw it air, you were just like, oh, okay. You know, this is before Jason's season was the first season of spoilers, but I only knew the ending. I didn't know anything that happened during the season. So my guess is if they're telling people, hey, you get to call in and ask questions about Jen and her suitors, that means it's group date. And that also means that it's probably going to be a radio show or some sort of thing, because it says calling in. I don't know why else, what else it could be. But that is your chance to be a part of the Bachelorette season. Sunday is going to be a one-on-one date. I have no idea what it's going to be. You'll find out probably the day before when they email you back if you get accepted. And then after that on Monday, you can be part of a group date, but it's just going to be by phone. So get your questions and send it to bachelorettadvice@gmail.com. If you want to be a part of Sunday's date, like I said, once again, bachelorettseattle@gmail.com is who you contact. And if you hear back from them, they will ask you questions and you'll get a confirmation email that you are on the list to come to the date. If not, and you don't hear back from them, then you can't go. Moving on to Vanderpump Rules. Last night, I don't know what episode it was of the season, but it was, for me, a little more comedy than normal, honestly. Like, as you know, jumped on board season 10, just on the reunion show. I jumped aboard when most people jumped aboard, once you heard about Scandoval. So I watched the reunion show, and I know who's hooked up with who. I know who's been with who in the past. And I know Lala's situation with Randall Emmett. I know about her relationship. But I got to think that her going through what she did with Randall and then in last night's episode has come to the point where she's holding a sperm donor party and playing pin the sperm on the vagina and having other people choose her sperm donor. I got to think that there's probably nobody in a million years that thought once she first got with Randall that a few seasons later, this is where she'd be. I'm not saying it's any sort of rock bottom. I just think it was funny. I got a kick out of the whole thing, the sperm donor party. Now, I do have questions. If anybody knows this, if anybody has used a sperm donor before, once she chose the sperm donor, I think they chose profile number one. Couple questions here. One, why did they only have three to choose from? Unless that was just cut for TV. Maybe she went through 10 profiles. I don't know. Two, does she ever get to find out who the person is that ends up being the father? Does she ever get to see a picture? Does she ever get a name? Or is it totally anonymous and she doesn't want to know? Have people in the past, do they have a choice of being able to choose, yeah, I'd like to see a picture. Doesn't mean I want to contact them. Doesn't mean I want to send them pictures or anything of my baby. I would just like to know who this person is. Can you do that? I have no idea. No idea how the sperm donor situation works. But I do find it curious. A lot of sexual innuendos made at that sperm donor party when they were playing pin the sperm on the vagina. We did find out that Lala is not a swallower. She just volunteered that to everybody. Said she was a spitter. Okay. We found out that Lisa had more fun pinning the sperm on a vagina board than she did actually conceiving her own children. We did find that out. I got a kick out of last night's episode, I'll be honest with you. The other question. So that was my whole thing in regards to the sperm donor party. I can only talk so much about Tom Sandoval and just how clueless this guy is. Everything that James said to him at that recording session was true. It's just, you know, look, I know this is months old. I mean, when Rachel's podcast came out, and she basically said all the things that she did about Tom and all that stuff about Sandoval. And it was just like, okay. And now we're seeing it, but it's like we already kind of knew the reaction because we've heard him say it 1,000 times already. Like the lag behind this show, the fact that that happened, and I think Rachel's podcast was like, what, August? And here we are in April? It's like, okay. But James put him in his place. Everything he said was true. And Sandoval, again, just clueless. Absolutely clueless. Here's a question I have, though. And I actually got an answer to this because when I texted a friend last night who's very much into the whole Vanderpump Rules scene, I got an answer that I was very surprised at. I was like, hey, whatever happened with this sandwich shop with Ariana and Katie? And I texted my friend and she's like, oh, no, that thing is totally like it's a done deal. It's over. It's like boarded up and shut down. And the person who told me this said the whole thing just seems to be a ploy for the show. It was never real. It was never serious. Yeah, they were selling merchandise and they thought they were going to open it, but it never opened and they've just given up on it. And it's not even a store. And they're not even trying to get it open. It's done. Which I didn't know. I didn't realize they had boarded up that sandwich shop and it was just over. I don't know if it was never real and it was just only for show. It seemed like, this season, didn't we see them go through a whole taste testing thing? But, you know, again, it could be reality TV and this was all fake and they were never going to open up a sandwich shop. It seems like after a year of going through stuff, it seems like they tried. And then once they couldn't, for whatever reason, it just got put on the back burner. I don't even know if we're going to see a storyline about that. But I had no idea it was done and over with, and it was boarded up, and it's not even happening. So I guess we'll find out the rest of this season if Ariana and Katie end up talking about it. But, yeah, that was news to me. Did not know that. So I want to talk about what I brought up in the open, and that is that Jenny Garth has branched out and started a second podcast, a solo podcast of her own called the I Choose Me Pod. And we know this is the infamous line from season 5, episode 31 of Beverly Hills 90210, season 5, where Dylan had told Kelly after a season of just everything in the world bad happening to her, she had to go through the fire. The fire was the year before, and then Professor Finley was season, you know, it was just a mess with her. She had just been through so much, and the Professor Finley stuff, Dylan kind of saved her, and then she felt like they were kindred spirits, and then we had that Real McCoy episode where they felt that they were soulmates in a previous life, all this stuff. So Dylan had the dream about it, so he just figured that Kelly was his soulmate. Even though Brandon was Kelly's girlfriend, Dylan made a move and said, he kissed her, and then he decided to buy her a trip around the world and present it to her while she was still in a relationship with Brandon. Then Brandon, not trying to be one-upped, decides to propose to Kelly by putting her ring in a rollerblade. Romantic, I know. Anyway, Kelly obviously is torn. The episode where Andrea leaves to go to Yale with Jesse is where she makes her decision. Everybody's at the Peach Pit. It's almost like Wizard of Oz, of Dorothy saying goodbye to everybody. Very emotional moment for those that watched the show for up all through those 5 seasons. Andrea leaves, and that's when everyone just kind of separates, and Kelly says she wants to talk to Brandon and Dylan. She says, I've made my decision. I can't remember who she said no to first. I think she said, Brandon, I can't marry you. Here's the ring. Brandon started walking away. Dylan, I guess, in his mind, thought he won, but she said, Dylan, I can't go around the world with you either. I know I have to make a choice, and I choose me. Which is a line that has become infamous with Kelly Taylor, with Beverly Hills 90210. It's one of the most memorable lines in the history of the show. And now Kelly has made it her brand, as she had sold merchandise of I Choose Me. This week, she just happened to, on the 90210 OMG podcast, this is the episode they are covering. So I guess it was fitting. They timed it perfectly to where she announced it yesterday. I'm starting a new podcast called I Choose Me, where she's going to talk about whatever. The interesting thing for those that don't remember is literally the episode after she said I Choose Me, she basically told Brandon, I still want to be with you. I still want to date you. Why can't we make things work out between us? And Brandon's like, no, you just rejected my marriage proposal. No. So, again, the I Choose Me, while a great line, And while very women empowering, when you kind of take it back the very next episode, how much power did it have? I choose me, but then you really, the next episode, wanted to be with Brandon and told him as much. So, whatever. Just, hey, just laying out the facts. Of course, that led to, I think right after that is when they all went to Palm Springs for the fraternity party. Brandon gets drunk. Steve finds out that Elle has a wiener. What else happened in that? Brandon gets busted with taking Valerie's car out. He gets pulled over by the cops. They find a joint. Valerie's got to bail him out. That was the whole deal when Dylan finds out that the people that he was working on a screenplay, people wanted to buy it, and he got a weird feeling about these guys. He called Christine Pettit at the FBI. Those guys found out about it, and they took him up on the, not the monorail, but that people mover in Palm Springs, and hung him out over the edge and basically told him, "We didn't kill your dad, but we know who did." And then from that point forward, that leads into season 6 in the first 10 episodes, which is probably the greatest storyline this show has ever told. Dylan wanting revenge and finding out who his dad's killer was, a guy by the name of Tony Marchette, who had a daughter who Dylan thought was a son, and he was going to go confront him in school, finds out, played by Rebecca Gayhart. They end up falling in love, get married, and in a big old switcheroo, the dad ends up killing his daughter, thinking it was Dylan in the car, on a very stormy and dark night. Can you tell that I'm very, very invested? But honestly, I do think the first 10 episodes of season 6 is the best long-term storytelling this show ever did. So, where was I going with this? Oh, yeah, and then when Brandon gets back from Palm Springs is the first time he makes out with Valerie. And the season ends with him making out with Valerie on the couch after Brandon has basically kind of Heisman'd Kelly about getting back into his life because he's still bothered by the fact that she rejected his marriage proposal. All this to say, really can't wait to not listen to I Choose Me. You know, it's bad enough in the very few episodes I've listened to. I've never even listened to a full episode of 90210 OMG. I can't. I've tried, I think, 10 minutes of a couple, and it's just unbelievable to me how little these women who were part of the show, and I get it. I get it was 30 years ago, but they offer no insight whatsoever. Their producer is incredibly annoying. I've told you I have a past with her that is justified in me calling her incredibly annoying. And I know more about 90210. I just recited to you basically the storylines that happened in the last two episodes of season 5. And oh yeah, that was also the episodes where Ray pushed Donna down the stairs. I guarantee before they recap that episode and they rewatch the episode and then they recap it on the podcast. I guarantee before that episode, if you were to ask Jenny Garth, "Hey, what happens in this episode?" she would have no fucking clue. And I know that she has problems. She's admitted to having memory problems, but then it's almost like, then why are you doing the podcast? Like, people want to listen to you talk about it so you can add insight, tell stories, tell anybody what you remember from this. They are so clueless about their own show. It's like, what are we doing here? But if she wants to start her own podcast, I'm not going to prevent her from doing it. I can't imagine, in the few snippets I've listened to of 90210 OMG, how I Choose Me is going to be even better. Remember I talked earlier in the week about SNL from this past Saturday and the whole deal with Ryan Gosling and how great I think he is and some of the funny sketches that he's been in, but that he broke every single sketch he was in this past Saturday. The one I forgot to talk about was the Beavis and Butthead one. And it's literally everywhere on my For You page scrolling through TikTok. I want to say every 5 videos is the clip or the whole sketch. And if you haven't seen it, just go. I don't want to recap it, but if you haven't seen it, go look for Beavis and Butthead SNL sketch. I think if you just Google that, it'll come up. The interesting thing about it, though, is one of the cool things about Saturday Night Live is obviously it being a live show. If people break and start laughing, there's nothing you can do. You can't edit it out. So there have been some classic breaks in the past. The Blue Oyster Cult, Jimmy Fallon, one of the all-time breaks, and it might be the leader in the clubhouse, was Lindsay Lohan and everybody at Disneyland in the Debbie Downer sketch. That might be the sketch where the most people laughed and laughed for the longest amount of time. This Beavis and Butthead sketch from Saturday was so random and so bizarre yet hilarious. And the fact that Heidi Gardner broke for a good 20 to 30 seconds and could not stop laughing. Usually somebody will laugh, they'll chuckle, maybe laugh for 5 seconds, maybe even 10. Heidi Gardner lasted a good 20 or 30 seconds laughing. She could not stop laughing at Mikey Day dressed as Butthead. And maybe, I mean, look, there's plenty of people out there that think Beavis and Butthead might be the stupidest things ever created. To me, they aren't. To me, if you get past all the laughing part of their bit and the chuckling, and then it's when they used to recap videos and they used to watch MTV videos and just make comments, it was some of the smartest comedy. I know you think I'm crazy when I say that, but if you actually listen to what Butthead and Beavis say when they talk about certain videos and the comparisons they make, it was really, really funny. It was ahead of its time, is what it was. But yeah, some people don't get the and just that stuff and all that. I get that part. That could get a little bit overbearing. I get it. But when they started critiquing the videos, it was some of the smartest comedy around. And this was in the 90s. That's why I say it was ahead of its time. People, if this came out today, people would be like, what the hell is this? But that sketch was, it was just hilarious. And Ryan Gosling and Mikey Day as Beavis and Butthead really did nothing in the sketch other than sit there and wear costumes that made him look like Beavis and Butthead. That was really it. But you got to check it out. It is, if you can't laugh at that, then, and you don't just laugh by them laughing, I don't know. Something wrong with you, because it is really funny. Finally, I want to talk about this. I started talking about this over a year ago. And I'm here to tell you, I still do it. And that's Wordle. I do it every day. The only times I've forgotten to do Wordle is when I'm out of town. But my days are pretty much the same here. And I do Wordle. The new Wordle starts for me at midnight Central Time. I don't go to bed before midnight. So basically, right when the clock starts midnight, assuming I'm not still recording my podcast, I do it right at like 12 o'clock. So I'm still doing it. And I see a story on the internet about how somebody on a plane was sitting across the aisle and one row behind somebody who was doing Wordle, but they had two tabs open. They had the Wordle open, and then they had a tab open that had all the words, five-letter words. They were obviously just cheating to try and get it. And this happened like last year, but apparently it's made its rounds again on TikTok. And now everyone's calling this person out. I mean, it's obviously not a major deal. It's like if they want to cheat on Wordle. My whole point is I'm kind of on the side of why would you cheat at Wordle? What do you get out of it? Because Wordle isn't for money. You're not winning some sort of prize unless you are doing it within your friend group and you're seeing who has a better score that would be the only way you would cheat at Wordle, because the whole point is not to cheat. It's to try and solve the puzzle. If you're down to your last guess and you've got three letters, I mean, I don't understand someone cheating. But this person that was sitting a row behind and across the aisle zoomed in their phone and you could see this other person's phone. And it was clear they were cheating. One of their tabs open was Wordle and one of their tabs open was a website that had five-letter words or something, because it had a list of words. You could see it. And it was just funny that someone got exposed on a plane. Now, this isn't somebody recording Nick Vial coming back from Puerto Rico and talking to his family and telling them over the phone out loud and on on his headset that Andy didn't pick him. It's not quite that level of invasion of privacy, but it was funny to see that this person, whoever it is, you can't see their face, their name hasn't been identified. Maybe they'll come forward, I don't know, and be like, yeah, that was me and this is why I did it. I just think it's totally counterproductive and pointless to cheat at Wordle. Why? Unless you have something to gain by it. But if you're just playing it by yourself to see if you can, you know, beat the game and get the word in before six guesses, why would you cheat? It makes no sense. Just thought I'd pass that along. By the way, if you're interested in my Wordle stats, I have played 762 times. My win percentage is 96%. My current streak is only 8. Because if you don't play for a day, it resets. Your streak goes back to 0. And there was a, like, over a week ago, I missed a day. I just forgot because I think I recorded my podcasts. And I was going till past midnight, and I just forgot to play before I went to bed. And my max streak is 75. A majority of my Wordles are solved in 4 or 5 guesses. 246 at 4, 221 at 5, 115 at 6, 130 at 3, as I did yesterday's. I've got it in 2 guesses 18 times and 1 guess 1 time, but that was only because I was talking to my dad and he didn't know that I hadn't done the Wordle yet, and he told me the word, so I had to play it. But yeah, max streak of 75. I do remember that one. That ended like maybe 3 months ago. I was rolling there for a while. But yeah, 96% out of 762 games played. Anyway, thank you all for listening. Really appreciate it. Follow me on Apple Podcasts. Also, rate and review, but you got to hit play. It's the only way it counts as a download, so please do that. The Sports Daily will be up in an hour from now if you want to check that out. Thank you all for listening. We're back tomorrow with yet another Daily Roundup. Again, thank you for listening, and I will talk to you tomorrow. See you!